Good morning. This is the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee meeting. My name's John Butler. I know most of you. You know most of me. We'll call this meeting to order. Welcome to the meeting. And Ms. Hannon, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Rita Athus. Trustee Dennis Barsima.
Here.
Committee Chair John Butler.
Here.
Board Chair Montel Gales. Trustee Veronica Herrero. Trustee Tim Moore.
Here.
Trustee Leland Strom.
Here.
Committee Vice Chair Eric Wasowitz.
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Perry, would you please verify that we have a quorum and that the appropriate notice of this meeting has been posted?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. You have a quorum present. An appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act.
Thank you very much. May I have a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting?
So made.
Thank you. There's a motion by Trustee Strom. Is there a second?
Second, Barsima.
A second from Trustee Barsima. Is there any discussion? All in favor of adopting the agenda as specified, please say aye.
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 Any opposition? Any abstentions? The motion carries. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting of February 15th, 2024?
So moved, Wasowitz.
There's a motion by Trustee Wasowitz. Is there a second?
Second, Strom.
A second from Trustee Strom. Is there any discussion? All those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposition? Any abstentions? The motion carries. I would like to welcome everyone here to our May meeting of this committee. This is an exciting time of the year. This weekend, we celebrate the graduation of students earning graduate and undergraduate degrees. And on June 1st, we will celebrate the graduation of our law students. Each of these students has devoted significant time and effort to reach this important milestone. We're very proud of all of them. Today, we have four items for approval and two information items. Our first action item is the approval of tenure and promotion for NIU's faculty. The tenure and promotion process is a rigorous evaluation that started last summer with the submission of faculty portfolios. These portfolios were evaluated using a shared governance framework, starting in the academic departments, moving to the college level, to the provost office, faculty senate, and then to the president. We are also very proud of all our faculty and their accomplishments. We will vote on the appointment of the new dean of the College of Business, Joan Phillips Hernandez. I'm delighted that Dr. Phillips Hernandez could join us remotely this morning. Dr. Phillips Hernandez will have a chance to give remarks after the vote on that action item. I'd also like to thank our current interim dean, Denise Shanebockler, for her leadership over the college over the last year. We will vote on the appointment of the Vice President for Research and Innovation Partnerships, Richard Makarski. Dr. Makarski is with us remotely today as well. Dr. Makarski will have a chance to give remarks after the vote on that agenda item. I'd also like to thank Yvonne Harris for her leadership of the division over the last year. We then have the approval to reappoint the acting dean of the College of Education, William Pitney. Dr. Pitney is with us in person today. Hello, Dr. Pitney. He has done a wonderful job as acting dean for the last year, and we appreciate his willingness to continue until a national search can be launched this fall. Thank you very much. Our information items include a presentation by the Vice President for Enrollment Management, Marketing, and Communications, Saul Jensen, with an update on university enrollment goals, and a presentation by Associate Vice Provost for Teaching, Learning, and Digital Education, Jason Rohde, on supporting AI use for teaching and learning. Before we go to the agenda, I want to welcome any University Advisory Committee representatives present today. I see Larissa Garcia and Karen Wedby. Would either of you like to make any comments to the committee? Thank you. Mr. Perry, have any members of the public registered a written request to address the board in accordance with state law and Board of Trustees bylaws?
Mr. Chair, we have no public comment this morning.
Thank you. I would then like to invite Executive Vice President and Provost Lori Ellis Piper to present the university recommendations.
Thank you, Chair Butler. I too am really excited about our upcoming commencement ceremonies, and I look forward to celebrating the achievements of our students along with their families, friends, and supporters, as well as our faculty and staff. I want to take a moment to talk about the vital role that faculty play in supporting our student success. And many of them will be at commencement this weekend, celebrating along with them. And also, I want to give a special thanks to our advisors and other staff who support student success. And many of those folks will be volunteering at our commencement ceremonies to make sure that they go smoothly and everyone has a great time. Today, we have four action items. Item 7A concerns recommendations for promotion and tenure. These recommendations are the culmination of a long and rigorous process to evaluate the research scholarship and artistry and the teaching and service activities of our tenured and tenure track faculty. Each faculty member has dedicated many years to developing their research, to honing their teaching skills, and to providing service and leadership both on and off campus. This item includes one promotion of a clinical assistant professor to clinical associate professor included for informational purposes, promotion of 18 faculty members from associate professor to the rank of professor, and 16 faculty recommended for promotion from assistant to associate professor with tenure, one promotion of assistant professor to associate professor, two tenure-only recommendations, and four hires at the rank of professor with tenure. I congratulate each faculty member on this important milestone achievement in their careers. The university recommends that the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee endorse this request and asks that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at today's special meeting on May 9th, 2024. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Provost Ellis Piper. Before I ask if there's any questions on this item, I want to ask Ms. Hannon if she would please record the arrival of Trustee Herrero. Good morning and welcome. So does anyone have any questions about this item?
I don't have any questions, but I just have a comment. I just wanted to congratulate all of the names on this list. I know several, and I've had the honor of working with them in the past, and so just want to congratulate all of the people who are receiving tenure, receiving new titles. Congratulations.
Excellent. Any other questions on the item, comments on the item? Before we take a motion, Ms. Hannon, I also now see also the arrival of our colleague, Trustee Affis. Good morning and welcome. If you could record that, please. At this point, may I have a motion to approve item number 7A. Trustee Affis, this is recommendations for faculty tenure and promotion that will be effective 2024-2025. A motion?
So moved, Barsema.
Trustee Second. Barsema makes the motion. Trustee Wasowitz seconds. Is there any discussion of this item? At this time, I would like to remind Trustee Moore that as a student trustee, one of the few things you can't do is to vote on tenure and promotion. So rather than voting yes, you can simply abstain when your name is called. Ms. Hannon, would you please take the roll call vote?
Trustee Rita Affis?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsema?
Yes.
Committee Vice Chair John Butler?
Yes.
Board Chair Montel Gales? Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Yes.
Trustee Tim Moore?
I abstain.
Trustee Leland Strom?
Yes.
Trustee Eric Wasowitz?
Yes.
The motion carries. Provost Ellis Piper, would you please present the next item?
Yes. Item 7B is the appointment of the Dean of the College of Business. Following a national search and pending board approval today, Dr. Joan Phillips Hernandez has accepted an offer to be the Dean of the College of Business. Dr. Phillips Hernandez was a professor of marketing in the College of Business Administration at the University of Missouri St. Louis, where she also served as dean. As dean, she advanced cybersecurity, entrepreneurship, fintech, supply chain analytics, degree and non-degree executive programs as strategic priorities. In addition, she integrated the Center for Excellence for Financial Counseling and Planning into the College of Business and led the launch of the MBA Online MS in FinTech, and PhD in Supply Chain Analytics degrees, and customized non-degree executive programs. In addition, she increased the diversity of the college faculty and staff while creating an inclusive culture committed to advancing impactful research and student success. Prior to her appointment at the University of Missouri-St. Louis, Joan served as the dean and a professor at Barry University's Andreas School of Business. While at Barry, she led the successful launch of online MBA programs, received AACSB reaccreditation, established entrepreneurship and analytics labs, and transitioned the Bachelor of Public Administration and Master of Public Administration programs targeted at adult learners into the business school. Dr. Phillips Hernandez also held administrative positions at Loyola University in Chicago, including Special Assistant for Academic Innovation and Strategic Planning, Associate Dean of Business, Department Chair, Graduate Program Director, and Professor of Marketing. Dr. Phillips Hernandez earned a BA in Political Science from the State University of New York at Albany, an MBA from the Darden Graduate School of Business at the University of Virginia, and a PhD in Business Administration in Marketing and Statistics from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. The university recommends that the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee approve the appointment of Dr. Phillips Hernandez as Dean of the College of Business, effective July 1, 2024, and asks that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at today's special meeting on May 9, 2024.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions about this item? May I have a motion then to approve item 7B, the appointment of the Dean of the College of Business?
So moved. Wasowitz.
Second, Barsema.
Okay, that's been worked out. You let people work these things out on their own. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion of this item? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Any abstentions? The motion carries. At this time, I would like to invite Dr. Phillips Hernandez to give brief remarks. She is attending remotely, I hope so.
Good morning. What an honor it is to be now part of the NIU team. I'm very excited to get started and build on the great work of the faculty and the staff and the alumni and the former deans to move Northern Illinois forward into its next chapter. It's a big time to celebrate not only the graduation, but the AACSB reaccreditation. And I look forward to being part of the next chapter of success for the next many years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In light of those remarks, does anyone on the board wish to make any follow-up comments before we move on? Trustee Barsema?
Just say, Dean, welcome to NIU and the Husky family. Ordinarily, I would recommend that you change the colors in your room to red and black, but since you have Cubby Blue up there on the wall, we're okay with that.
Any other comments from the committee? Okay, thank you.
Well, Dennis, she was at Loyola, so I'm guessing that really is Covey Blue up there because she wasn't far from Wrigley. So.
Well, let's hope that you're passing the litmus test on the Chicago baseball teams.
I remember 2016 very well.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Excellent. Provost Elish Piper, would you please present the next item?
Yes. Item 7C is the appointment for the Vice President for Research and Innovation Partnerships, Dr. Richard Makarski. He has been selected to serve as the next Vice President for Research and Innovation Partnerships. Dr. Makarski currently serves San Jose State University as the Associate Vice President of Research with responsibility as the Institutional Official for Research Compliance, Authorized Official for Sponsored Projects, and Vice President of the Board of Directors for the San Jose State University Research Foundation. Dr. Makarski has 2 decades of progressive experience in research administration, including experience collaborating and working across disciplines to solve problems and to advance research, scholarship, and artistry. Over the course of his career, he has played a leadership role in securing and administering more than $700 million in external funding. During our 2023 national search, NIU stakeholders were highly impressed by his significant experience as a federally funded principal investigator, his deep appreciation for evolving forms of scholarship, and his commitment to facilitating the success of faculty, staff, and students. They recognized his documented success at developing strategy, building relationships, and using data to inform decisions. Dr. Makarski holds bachelor's degrees in English and psychology from the University of Michigan and a master's degree in communication studies and PhD in communication and information sciences from the University of Alabama. The university recommends that the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee approve the appointment of Dr. Richard Makarski as the Vice President for Research and Innovation Partnerships effective July 1, 2024, and asks that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at today's special meeting on May 9, 2024.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have anyone on the committee have any questions about this item? Seeing none, may I have a motion to approve item 7C, the appointment of the Vice President for Research and Innovative Partnerships.
So made, Strum.
Second, Herrera.
There is a motion by Trustee Strum and a second by Trustee Herrera. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? Any abstentions? The motion carries. At this time, I would like to invite Richard Makarski, Dr. Makarski, to give brief remarks. Dr. Makarski is participating remotely, I believe.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really excited at this very early California morning. And joining NIU. When I came last year and subsequently this year, NIU represents everything that I think the Academy is good at in discovery, and I can't wait to support the faculty and students in their efforts in research and innovation, and really just excited to be asking.
Excellent. In light of those remarks, anyone on the committee wish to make any follow-up comments? Questions, Trustee Strom?
I'll just say welcome back to the Midwest, and we look forward to your leadership here in this role.
Thank you, looking forward to it.
Excellent. Okay, Provost Elish Piper, would you please present the next item?
Yes, item 7D concerns the reappointment of Dr. William Pitney as acting dean of the College of Education for the period of July 1, 2024 through June 30, 2025. Due to the search for the executive vice president and provost position in the spring of 2024, a national search for the next dean of the College of Education could not be started. Dr. Pitney has done an excellent job this year as acting dean, and his reappointment will give us sufficient time to launch a national search. I consulted with the College of Education Senate and the College of Education College Council, who enthusiastically support Dr. Pitney's reappointment for another year. The university recommends that the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee approve the reappointment of Dr. William Pitney as acting dean of the College of Education effective July 1, 2024, and ask that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its special meeting today, May 9, 2024.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions about this item? May I have a motion to approve item 7D, the reappointment of acting dean of the College of Education?
So moved, Herrera.
There's a motion by Trustee Herrera and a second by Trustee Athis. Is there any discussion? Trustee Barsima.
I just want to say thank you, Bill. I've known you for a long time here, and you've served NIU, and you've served the college in so many different capacities, and have done an outstanding job in all of them. So thank you once again for stepping forward to serve. Appreciate it.
I would just say, Bill, I heard over the years that you've worn lots of hats, too. So thank you for all the hats that fit. Thank you.
Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Any abstention? The motion carries. Dr. Pitney, would you like to make any remarks?
Yes, thank you for your confidence in me, and I just want to extend a special thanks to Provost Ellis Piper for her support of me in my role this past year, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to serve one more year working with our amazing faculty and staff to support our students to the fullest extent possible. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I would like to now move to university reports. I invite Executive Vice President and Provost Ellis Piper to present the university reports.
Yes, item 8A is a presentation by our Vice President for Enrollment Management, Marketing, and Communications, Saul Jensen. He will provide an update on the university enrollment goals.
Good morning, trustees. It's great to be here. It's a privilege to be able to share some of these updates. I'll have an assist from Executive Vice President Provost Ellis Piper as well, be able to answer any questions you have. But at the same time, I think I, like many others, are very interested in the AI presentation coming up here very shortly as well. next slide, Cindy. We are going to present on some of the enrollment goals that are specific in the university goals, more specifically goals 2A, about increasing enrollment and enhancing student success. And this goal incorporates intentional, evidence-based approaches for recruiting new students, reaching out to re-enroll students, messaging that's been updated, and various programs that meet the different needs of our distinct populations. Prior to jumping right in, I want to take just one moment and acknowledge, I have some visitors here, which I normally don't do. I typically provide these updates, but I think it's important to acknowledge the rest of a team. And again, there's a much bigger team, but I think it's important to acknowledge some very key individuals as we go through these updates who, quite frankly, do a lot more than I do. So first is Lisa Miner. I think you all know Lisa Miner. She's not here, but she's listening online. And I know you all appreciate her a great deal. Janice O'Brien, look, quick little wave, there we go. She oversees our university marketing and brand. We have Mayra Lagunas, who oversees our undergraduate admissions and recruitment. Ann Hardy, scholarships, financial advising. Janelle Lodick in our graduate school, really still a newer member of the team focused on graduate enrollment. And I also want to acknowledge Samantha McCarron, who is our director of financial aid. She's in the office getting financial aid ready. So I thought it was more important for her to stay in the office, but I at least want to acknowledge her and the whole team's work. And I know later, Lori will also be introducing a new colleague that's doing some fantastic work already. I also want to acknowledge that most of these priorities here are also listed in the SEM 2.0 plan, and that's intentional to have the SEM plan and the university goals in alignment. And I think the trustees and the university community received an update just last week of reporting of some of our activities over this past year with the SEM plan. And I think it's also important to acknowledge this morning all of the work that's being done throughout campus within the shared equity leadership, which is also another university goal. I also want to state that while our initiatives are very much in alignment with our progress towards our HSI designation, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time today focused on those specific initiatives, because I know that you recently received a wonderful report from Dr. Clint Michael Renaud and Dr. Carol Sumner in a board meeting. One final note before I get started, I just want to convey to the board and really the university community that most of these initiatives demonstrate the university striving for improvement, which we always strive to do, and that not necessarily are any of these things brand new or things that we weren't already doing well, but we are seeking, striving to improve. All right, with that, let's move on to the next slide, please, Cindy. So during the 2022-23 academic year, we conducted a perception study to better understand the perceptions, a reputation with prospective students, their families, current students, faculty, staff, alumni, donors, high school counselors, and community college counselors, a lot of different audiences. This study affirmed positive themes and characteristics at NIU, including affordability, career outcomes, academic experience, and fit, as well as highlighted opportunities for growth and improvement. Affordability includes moderate tuition and fee rates, affordable housing, and also the availability of scholarships and financial aid at NIU. Career outcomes are focused on job placement, graduate and professional placement, internships, and career service offerings. The academic experiences mostly focus on students' experiences with faculty and advisors, comprehensive programs, and classroom and lab facilities. And fit encompasses the diversity of our student population, the availability of engaging activities, the sense of belonging, and the overall DeKalb community. So over this past year, we have been very busy implementing recommendations from this survey as we work to provide the best available experience for our students. So let me highlight one example. As career outcomes and the value of an NIU experience become even more important to students and their families, last fall we began working with a new partner, Stepping Blocks, to create a graduate outcomes interactive dashboard, which illustrates the success of our alumni in the workforce. This resource lets us identify alumni outcomes in categories such as top employers, occupations, job titles, salaries, geographic insights, hiring trends, and needed skills. Data can be sorted then by academic, college, and program. This information has helped us communicate our strong value to key audiences, including prospective students, current students, alumni, and donors, legislators, and others. Our newly revamped career services website also features information about a digital career counselor functionality, which is another function of Stepping Blocks, which allows enrolled students to research future careers with real-world statistics and NIU statistics about potential job titles, salaries, companies, and the analysis of skills needed to be successful, all based on their majors, interests, or various industry fields. This is a great resource for career counselors, academic advisors, and all other faculty and staff who work with students in preparing them to transition into their careers. Next slide, please. Our communications team members have created key messages for each of those four priorities, and we have now been updating this messaging in all of our various communications. One significant revision was updating all of the undergraduate academic program web pages. The academic program pages are some of the most searched and viewed on the entire NIU website, so we know that they have to have a strong presence. In addition to a common template with calls to action, each of these now includes relevant alumni outcomes data. We've also spent a great deal of time working with the communication specialists throughout the colleges to update specific messaging to each academic program. Here you can see an example of just one of the programs in the College of Business who sent this postcard series to admitted students this spring with messaging from an alum, from a current student, and from a faculty member highlighting the benefits of that degree program at NIU. Next slide, please. Probably where we placed the most focus over this past year has been in improving our campus visits. We knew that we needed to increase our capacity to host more students and families on campus. The primary focus was on hiring back a full team of student ambassadors. At times last spring and early in this academic year, we only had about a dozen or so who were trained to give a campus tour. Today, our team of ambassadors is close to 50, which was our goal, and that's our ideal number. I'll just add as well that of those 50, 10 are bilingual and 2 are proficient in American Sign Language.
All right, Saul.
Yeah.
Good job.
Being back to full staff has allowed us to increase our capacities. So compared to 420 last year, this year we could offer up to 740 campus visitors per week. It's a huge increase per week. This also includes increasing the capacity of our very popular Saturday visits from 60 to 180. We did all of this while also doubling the number of group visits from 45 to 93. We have a lot of high schools, community colleges, community-based organizations who want to bring their students to campus. Our goal, even though the demand is high, is to never turn away students or groups that want to visit campus. That's our goal.
So, Saul, just a quick question. You said we can accommodate up to 740 a week. What do we average a week?
Oh, geez.
Do we know?
I will give you a total amount. I'm not sure on the average. I could find that out for you, though. Yep. So altogether, this is actually perfect timing. Altogether, we have seen over 1,800 more campus visitors this year just in our daily tours compared to last year.
That's great. Good job.
That's approximately 8,000 guests in just our daily campus tours. When you include our larger group events, our preview days and our admitted student days, we've increased that number by about 1,200 over last year. So that's over 3,000 more student or more visitors at all of our events than last year, for a total of about 12,000 total visitors throughout the daily and the large group events. And I'll just add that the last two admitted student days that were both hosted in April were the two largest recruitment events that we've hosted since before COVID. So we're getting back to pre-COVID again.
Yeah.
And in case you're wondering, we do still offer virtual recruitment events as well, and we'll continue to do that as another option for students and families to engage with us if they're not able to come and visit campus. All those numbers aside, we still have a new event, an admitted student day specifically for first generation students. This will be our first time hosting. That will be next Friday. So those numbers aren't included, as well as the we've been able to really increase our capacity for the summer, which is very critical timing because of the FAFSA challenges. Many of the students are doing things later, and so for us to have the ability to continue to host a high number of students throughout the summer is going to be very important to us to try and claw back with our new student enrollment. So in addition to increasing our attendance, we also sought to provide a better experience for our campus visitors. Noting how important the academic experiences are to students based on the perception study, we worked closely with the deans and their teams to provide highly engaging opportunities for students to learn more about academic programs at our large student events. And in most cases, to do those in their facilities. These experiences ranged from building robots to virtual reality to nursing simulation lab tours to Southeast Asian martial arts, only to name a few. These were a huge hit, and I expect that we'll continue to expand upon these in future years. Just a few weeks ago, we hosted our third annual Bienvenido, our Spanish bilingual admitted student day. While still smaller than other admitted student days, this is a great event, and the families just love it. As our number of Latinx students continues to grow and as we focus on serving this, as we near an HSI designation, it's my goal to expand this program to many more students and families in the future. Also, utilizing the key messaging from the perception study, we've also completely rewritten the campus tour script and redesigned the admissions presentation. And the two are now meant to be one seamless message when students visit campus, a combination of relevant data and meaningful storytelling. We've even modified the campus tour route a bit. I can just say, without getting into a whole lot more detail, it's actually no small feat to try and highlight everything we want about the greatness of NIU in just an hour-long show and tell. And so a lot of effort's been put into this. And then in addition to housing options, which we already show on our visit, students are also have had interest in eating in one of our dining centers on campus. And I want to give a huge shout out to Dr. Clint Michael Renault and his team, who has now made this possible to have during our daily campus tours and some of our larger events to be able to host our students in the dining centers and to give them a real life feel of campus dining on campus. We'll move forward. Let's go next slide.
Saul, can I mention one thing about campus visits? I was here the day that we had Tugs.
Oh, yeah.
Came out to watch our friend Tim. And President Freeman was at Tugs.
Yeah.
And she said, we got 800 people on the other side of campus.
Yeah.
Out for campus visits. So, of course, she's everywhere. So she was, you know, moving over to that side of campus.
Yep.
But that was blew me away.
Actually, the provost was there even while we were speaking.
She was there. Several of the deans. The dean showed up at a lot of these events too. It was, you know, yeah, great events. And again,
yeah,
that one, the 800, was the largest that we've had since before COVID.
Yeah. How did your fraternity do?
We won't
talk about that.
Yeah. They're not here anymore, but we're trying to get them back. Yeah. Don't make fun of his fraternity.
I would say that our commitment at NIU to access, affordability, and equity places us as a leader within the state and honestly one of the leaders in the country. As I mentioned before, during the perception study, it demonstrated the need for providing financial aid, generous financial aid, and we're backing that up. In fact, as the president recently shared in her legislative testimony, over 40% of our undergraduates do not pay any tuition or fees. You're all very aware of the Husky Pledge at NIU. It's still used as a model when legislators cite positive benefits of the state's Aim High program. We made the change this year to increase the family income and assets threshold from $75,000 up to $100,000, and we're now expecting to provide even more students with our pledge to cover tuition and fees, possibly for all 4 years. We've also made a change to our Aim High awards to students from CPS and the local area. Previously, we provided an additional $3,000, which was only for the first year. However, in an effort to help students and families better plan their finances over the course of 4 years, we have now changed it so they receive $1,000 every year. So in a total of $4,000, but it'll be split up. So they know what's coming to them every single year and they can better plan. And we've also then been working on other ways to strategically allocate some of our other funds to students, including undergraduate tuition waivers and our scholarships from the foundation. Next slide, please.
Hi, I'm gonna have the opportunity to talk about some of the things we've been doing to strengthen partnerships. And a key player in this work is a new team member who's not new to NIU specifically, but Dr. Rodrigo Lopez, there he is, is serving as our Executive Director for Community College Initiatives. He's been in this particular role for about 6 weeks, and it's a shared role across Academic Affairs and the Division of Outreach Engagement and Regional Development. And in that 6 weeks, Rodrigo has done really remarkable work, and we're thrilled to have him in this role because of his deep expertise in community colleges. He served in a variety of roles, most notably about 8 years at Elgin Community College in a variety of partnership-focused roles. And so in terms of strengthening partnerships, one of the key things that Rodrigo has been able to help us with in collaboration with others is this College and Career Pathway Endorsement Initiative. It's a requirement for high schools to have these for high school students to identify a meta major that they're interested in and then to have some early college credit and to have some career focused experiences and an internship so that when they graduate from high school, they're well on their path toward pursuing that particular career. And these types of partnerships are including things like specialized campus visits to bring students who might be interested in education or business or healthcare to campus to have a meaningful hands-on experience of what careers in that area would look like and what classes and degree programs in that broad meta major would look like. In addition to that, we're really excited about some of the opportunities that those relationships will provide for other recruitment-focused and partnership-focused efforts, such as having some of our students go back to their alma maters, go back to their high schools, and talk to students who are interested in that particular major and that particular field. We've also been working a lot with community college partnerships, and I think you probably have heard us talk a bit about relatively new relationship with the McHenry County College University Center. The University Center will be launching 5 NIU degree programs in the fall, and those are listed on the screen for you there, and they represent areas where there's high interest, high demand, where there's lots of students enrolled at McHenry County College, most of whom are location-bound. Many of them are working adults with responsibilities also for family, and so being able to complete their NIU degree at the University Center provides a viable, easy pathway for them to earn that degree. We're continuing to work with a lot of other community colleges, but I wanted to really just bring forward that newest partnership, and come fall of 24, the high amount of activity that we'll have in relationship to that. In addition to that, one of the things that Rodrigo's been working on in the last 6 weeks is trying to bring together a comprehensive community college strategy for NIU. We've been doing lots of community college and transfer work across campus, but we've never really brought it all together into a comprehensive plan where we can really coordinate and really leverage and really deepen those relationships. And just yesterday, Rodrigo came to the Council of Deans and talked about kind of a first draft of this strategy and had an opportunity to get input. But just to give you an idea of the priorities included in the strategy, there are 5 of them so far. Relationship management, really thinking about those relationships that we have with community colleges. Marketing and communications, working closely with Saul and members of his team to bring that all together. Transfer student friendliness, really looking at our policies, our procedures, transfer student experience, all of those things that really send a message that when transfer students come to NIU, they are well situated and well supported for success. The 4th priority area is looking at our program delivery, including place-bound programs, and thinking about the ways, are we serving our region? Are we meeting the needs? And then the 5th area is looking at workforce needs. Are there opportunities where there's significant workforce development needs that we could partner with community colleges, business industry, other organizations to really meet the needs of the workforce in specific areas? So we're excited to continue to develop and refine this plan, and our hope is to have the plan ready to launch in the fall so that we have this more comprehensive, more coordinated strategic approach to the ways that we're working with our community college partners.
Lori, I had a question. So from a community college standpoint, what are the largest, where are our students coming from mostly? Is it now McHenry trending? I mean, I live around by Harper. I live right by there. I mean, that's a big one.
Yeah, we do have a list, and we do track the top ones. I think Saul might have the order of the list.
Okay.
Yeah, RVC, Elgin, College of DuPage, Harper, McHenry. And you are correct, McHenry made a huge jump this year, even though we haven't actually entered in to the partnership yet. I think it's important to note, actually, President Freeman made an astute observation probably 3 or 4 years ago when all of the community college enrollments were declining across the state. McHenry was not. It was about the only community college that was not. And I remember back then, President Freeman saying, we need to be up at McHenry more. And so here we are now with this partnership launching in the fall.
Can I ask a quick question as well? So where we offer programs on the community college campus, are they taught by NIU faculty?
They are, yes. They're NIU degrees. They're taught by NIU faculty. They're advised by NIU advisors. They're fully NIU students. We're just offering the degree in a different location.
And I'm also curious, on as you listed the names of some of the community colleges, absent was Kishwaukee and Waubonsie. There are 2 closest, but I'm assuming we have partnerships existing there. So.
Yeah, and Waubonsie's right there, too. That makes up our top six. Kish usually falls right at seven, and obviously we're great partners with Kish. They're just a smaller school compared to many of the others, but we've got as good relationships with Kish as anyone.
And I'll jump in. I think it was it last Friday? Rodrigo and I had a meeting with some partners at Kishwaukee College talking specifically about some different collaborations, things like shared advising, you know, just a number of really innovative, important strategies. So they definitely are great partners.
So I know we just finished all the presidential award season, but if there's an award for the most accomplished in the first 6 weeks, I'd like to put in a nomination for Rodrigo, because 6 weeks in and he's got a strategic plan. It's pretty impressive. All right, next slide, please. So building upon that, you're all aware that NIU has been for decades a preferred destination for transfer students. They still make up about half of our total undergraduate population. So we've been working over this past year very closely with IBHE and the other public institutions in support of the initiatives within IBHE's strategic plan, A Thriving Illinois. In fact, both the president and I have been serving on various statewide groups led by the governor's office and IBHE focused on improving transfer initiatives. Back in July, you may recall, we launched our new transfer credit estimator tool. In just these 9 months, we've over 1,000 unique users, 400 of those with the intention of enrolling in this fall of 24, with over 8,300 courses that have been added to that tool. Our collaboration with REUP, which we have shared with you before and you've approved, that aims to re-engage students who have stepped away from NIU and to position them to succeed when they return to campus. So with only about 2 months runway into our partnership, NIU successfully re-enrolled about 30 students for this current spring 2024 semester, and almost all of them are re-enrolled for either the summer and or the fall. Further, there are more than 700 former students who have already expressed interest in returning to NIU. So more to come on this. We're also planning new ways to reach out and generate interest from working adults. It's estimated that the Chicago area has more than 2 million different individuals who have some college credit but not an undergraduate degree. So we are planning on creating new marketing and communication plans specific to their needs. We're considering creating additional online degree completion programs and reviewing how we assess prior learning, including work experience and military service. As an example, with the addition of a new advisor in the Bachelor of General Studies program, we're developing a new marketing strategy to increase awareness of that program's flexibility with scheduling and its positive career outcomes for adult learners. Next slide. Our work with adult learners naturally flows into strategic planning for growth of our graduate enrollment. Throughout this year, the grad school has been implementing SLATE. This is the same CRM, or relationship management tool, that is utilized by undergrad that we've been using for several years now. But the grad school is implementing even more features. Once fully implemented, which will be relatively soon, this will allow for more robust communication campaigns with prospective and incoming students, and will make the review and decision of applicants more efficient, thus shortening the time to notify students of admission decisions. These examples alone, and there's many more, but these examples should improve some of our yield. We're also working with EAB, our partner, to research and identify opportunities for increasing enrollment through other professional or online programs, helping us to better understand any challenges and areas of opportunity. All right, next slide, please. So throughout the presentation, you may have noticed several of our NIU ads scattered throughout the slides. Many of these initiatives demonstrate the significant importance of marketing and advertising, and how media buying can elevate our brand, overall messaging, and assist audiences in moving to the next enrollment step. This final slide is just an introduction to an item that's coming before you in the FACFO meeting later today. For the past 4 years, we have utilized partners to assist in our media placement, a primary partner with two subcontractors who both are registered BEP vendors. One of these partners specializes with ad placements in the Spanish-speaking market. All three have locations in Chicago, so they very much understand our primary market and how to reach them. Through this partnership, we benefit in several ways. With having one cohesive plan at large scale, we gain greater institutional buying power. We decrease our transactional costs, and we can then learn also from their expertise and their data analysis, providing us with the ability to pivot quickly based on those results. Just for your information, we currently spend about 70% is on digital, which means most of you and most of the university community never sees it. And so I know sometimes we get asked the questions, why don't we see you on more billboards or on TV? We are mostly digital, and I actually expect that that will probably increase as we start to incorporate more graduate programs and targeting adult learners, working adults, because that's where they are. So again, later with your approval, we would spend the next fiscal year completing a full RFP, which we expect will have a lot of interest, with the intention of entering into a new partnership beginning July 1st of 2025. The agreement would be a total of 5 years, with an initial 2 year, but then 3 1-year renewals. And we've structured it that way because we've heard previously from the board pretty clearly that we don't want to be locked in to a long contract, so that we have flexibility to renew on an annual basis. All right, next slide. So in conclusion, as I mentioned at the very beginning, last week the SEM committee co-chairs sent out an email to campus community with updates on key projects, many of which were included here today. These actions illustrate meaningful steps toward our efforts to increase enrollment and enhance student success as part of our university goals. And despite the negative impact that we are preparing for with the botched FAFSA rollout and how that may impact this year, as well as the future impending enrollment cliff, I still feel very excited about the positive momentum and direction that we're heading as an institution heading into future years with our enrollment. So with that, I'll say thank you and happy to address any further questions.
Thank you very much, Saul. We have some questions from the committee. I'll start with Trustee Athis.
Good morning. First of all, I want to say how effective your billboards are, because on my ride here, I saw three on the digital. I thought maybe you did that because you knew that was my route.
We knew your route, Trustee Athis. Yeah.
I was like, that's
we know
really,
all of your routes,
really
yeah.
impressive. No, it was great to see.
Because Rita, there's no signs on my route, but I'm all backcountry roads.
Oh, okay. Well, you need to take the Eisenhower, okay. And you'll have plenty of time because it's slow. I just had a comment on how comprehensive your strategy is, and I want to say that looking at all of it, there is no stone unturned, and really impressed with the breadth of it, and it's a great job. Look forward to having more and more students, even though we're going to hit that cliff at some point, come into NIU. Thank you.
Trustee Wasowitz.
Just one warning to Trustee Athis, driving while looking for our digital ad, probably not a good idea. I wish you could address the FAFSA, the botched FAFSA rollout. We've all heard a lot about that. It's kind of made national news. Where are we with that? What's the impact? What are your thoughts?
I could spend the rest of this meeting talking about that. Let me just focus on where we're at and then what we're planning to do. So at this point, again, financial aid is heads down, kind of in a bunker, getting everything ready. At this point, I expect it's probably going to be early next week when we can start to package our financial aid. What we continue to find, and we're not the only ones having this issue, but we're continuing to find is that there are errors that continue to pop up, and to be quite honest, when the errors pop up and you reach out to the Department of Education, there is no guidance. And so they are just letting institutions figure it out on their own. So at least I know that there is a consortium, even informally, of all the financial aid directors within the state. So they are all connecting with each other. They're connecting with ISAC to try and see if ISAC can provide any additional guidance, because what we don't want to do is to make assumptions that then award students, for example, like a MAP grant that then has to be removed later.
Yeah.
And so it is causing us to take a couple more days to make sure that once we do get our financial aid awards out, that we have gone through all the necessary steps, that we have tested everything fully, and that we're not gonna put students in a worse situation than kind of where we all are right now. So at this point, the plan is that we would have something out next week. For currently enrolled students, it'll be still a few weeks after that. But our initial priority is reaching out to the incoming students first. They tend to be the ones being impacted the most. We are still seeing, although it has continued to improve slightly over the past few weeks, we're still seeing about close to 20% fewer students who have filed their FAFSA to NIU than last year at the same time. Again, it's improved a little bit across the state as well. The state now is just down about 25% compared to last year. 3 weeks ago, it was 40%. And so it is slowly improving. I don't know if it's going to help or hurt once high school students are out of school, if that allows us better opportunities to be in touch with them, or if minus the school structure and the counselors, if we're not going to have it. So it'll be yet to be seen. But ultimately, at least as of right now, it's a significant impact, and students are just waiting. So for example, the that admitted student day where we had the 800 students, this was on April 20th, so just a few weeks ago. Obviously, so many students interested in NIU, but when we spoke with them, about 80% said they're still waiting, that there's no way they can make a decision until they know if they can afford to be here as well. So we know that it's impacting all of the schools really across the state and the country, but as I've said in several other venues, it doesn't impact institutions equally, meaning the majority of students who are not completing the FAFSA are students from underserved communities, first gen, lower income. And the concern here, as well as across the country, is that those students are just not going to go to college at all or take a gap year. So that's the biggest concern. And so once we have those financial aid awards out, we have a pretty comprehensive plan of how to continue to reach out to them, providing various understanding your financial aid webinars. We're going to continue to offer a lot more campus visits, again, traditionally, than we normally would in summer. Normally, this time of year, we'd just be pushing students to go to orientation, because that's the important thing to do during the summer. But we just know that students are still trying to make up their decisions. And so we're going to be very aggressive to try and, really recruit them all summer long.
Trustees wish to, Trustee Strom?
Saul, I'm also curious, as you look at this dilemma, and certainly the FAFSA is a very large problem, the glitches in that right now, but I also wonder with the economy the way it is right now, and with wage growth, is it drawing more high school graduates into the workplace because they say, boy, I can earn a few dollars more per hour now than a few years ago. And I'm wondering how that plays in, or any analysis that you might have on that.
Certainly before even the fiasco with the FAFSA, there were trends, national trends, that showed students were feeling less, had a lesser perception of higher ed. So it is still something that we are fighting. I'll tell you that part of the messaging that we are focused on once we get our financial aid out is not only that NIU value proposition, but just how important it is to go to college at all, and just the value of higher ed and getting their degrees and not delaying. So we are actually trying to hit both fronts here.
Trustee Barsima and Trustee Herrera.
Saul, thank you. Great job. I want to compliment you and your team, because I know last year, I'm not going to go as far as to call it broken, but the campus visit process was not efficient. And so you've done an amazing, you and your team have done an amazing job in making that process a lot better. And I'm sure the outcomes are going to follow. One of the things that I agree with that you mentioned relative to marketing on the digital side,
I'll take care of that. I agree on that 100%. We have a digital marketing degree in our College of Business. Do you use any interns from that department to give them some experience in digital marketing at all?
Hey, see you. So I'll restate that for the microphone, but several of our employees who are current employees have gone through and taken that program. We have hired some students. I don't think it's been intentional with the digital marketing, but we do have students that work in our office in various areas.
Yeah, whenever I work with companies that are consumer facing, I always used to ask them, how many employees do you have under the age of 30 in your marketing department who know how to reach the consumer today?
Yep.
Now I ask, how many employees do you have who have a degree in digital marketing to reach the consumer? So
yeah,
that's important.
Yeah. Great, thank you.
And I'm glad to hear that we recognize that. That's awesome.
Trustee Herrera.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. This is really wonderful. I echo everything Trustee Athas shared, and there were a few things that stood out. There are many things that stood out, but I mean how you're using alumni outcomes and career outcomes to inform comms and messaging is brilliant. I do hope, I'm sure you are, you know, looking at diverse stories, you know, stories with folks with diverse backgrounds so that it is relevant and welcoming to folks of all backgrounds. And the other thing I just would, you know, applaud you for is the Bienvenido a NIU. I mean, even if the numbers are small now, I think the message you're sending, right, even if families don't participate in it and choose to participate in the, you know, in English orientation, you're still sending the message that they're welcome. And that goes a very long way. So just, that's wonderful. And the next thing is just a comment or a question on re-up. So it's wonderful to hear that you're not just re-enrolling, but like you're getting warm leads from it. I am curious, how are we able to extract insights from the conversations that their teams are having with students who have stopped out to inform retention strategies, so how we would avoid more stop-outs?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, about a month ago, was it, Jason? We had a recap meeting with ReUp. They came out in person and presented to us, and this is a lot of what they presented to us. They presented recommendations, things that we could do to improve. Not only in terms of how to better re-enroll students, but to your point, how do we not lose them in the first place? And so that's a key component of what they provide to us. And so we're really interested in seeing after the like the first full year and seeing what that looks like, right? We'll have a better idea in September when we have our census day of fall and seeing how this really builds up. And again, as they've done this work now for many years and with other institutions, it really does build comprehensively over time. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they had mentioned to us is that, you know, oftentimes it takes 2 or 3 years
yeah.
of working with someone to overcome all those barriers to get them to return. And then, of course, we are very cognizant of, okay, well, once they're back, how do we keep them here and making sure we have the structures and the right processes and services in place to make sure that they are going to be successful to completion.
It would be great to hear back once you have, you know, a set of lessons learned and insights to see, like, who's coming back, what is speaking to them, right? What is resonating for them to return? And then, again, just insights on how to keep them here and how to keep other students here right before they step out. That would be really wonderful to hear back.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I just have a question about re-up as well, and I'm wondering if the process is uncovering any structural challenges with respect to the manner in which credit is counted, how things are transferring in, anything related to the expiration of any kinds of programs that students might have started their program in and so forth.
I'm gonna see if Jason actually wants to come up and help with the first part. But the second part, Jason's very involved with the re-up. But one of the things we learned from the report that we had just about a month ago is that, which we were actually surprised, is that almost all of the students, when they returned back to the original academic program that they left. We actually had thought that, we hypothesized that would be a bit different, that there would be some kind of a change there, or that they would really focus in on a program that would just get them to the graduation finish line as early as possible, but they have come back and really committed to the program that they started with. I don't know, Jason, if there were anything related to the challenges with the students coming back, is it related to their
Jason,
credits?
You have to speak into a microphone.
I know, sorry.
Otherwise, we'll lose your comments to history.
Yeah, I do. I'm next on the agenda. Yeah. So one of my roles, I help manage the partnership, our institutional partnership currently with REUP. And so I meet monthly. I have monthly meetings with my counterpart at REUP, who's managing the team on the REUP side. And we're having some fantastic collaborations as we are getting that outside vantage point of what are some of those pain points, what were maybe the wrinkles that the students encountered along the way. And so we're starting to uncover processes that we are thinking maybe it's time to take a fresh look at. For example, and I know Provost Elish Piper has had conversations already with the deans thinking about our process in terms of looking at students who are at risk in that kind of dismissal process and what that looks like and how we can, before they even leave, maybe take a fresh look at how are we helping to intervene before they step away, and then also thinking about when they are looking to come back. If they had poor academic standing when they left, how do we help fast-track that process for them to come back to the institution? And I don't know if Provost Elish Piper said anything else you wanted to add about the discussions you've already started with the deans.
Yeah, those have been some initial discussions. We've been looking at what our policies are and figuring out you know, what's actually being implemented in practice, and then identifying some ways that we might be able to streamline this. Because, as was mentioned, oftentimes these returning students take a long time to make a decision, but once they make a decision, they want to move quickly. And so we need to make sure that we can efficiently go through a process of readmission. And we've targeted this summer as a time to really dig into that, and then hopefully come fall, you know, we'll have a proposal for what some revised policies would look like to make that readmission process more streamlined and more efficient.
Thank you. I just want to just follow up really quickly that you're answering another question I had, which was, what are we doing with students who left with poor academic performance, and in particular, if they might have left, you know, at 18, 19, or 19 years of age, having been academically dismissed, do they need to go through some sort of complex process of perhaps matriculating at a community college, getting a GPA that's acceptable to come back? I mean, is there, and you don't have to answer the question, but I just wanted to point out that I'm glad to hear that we're thinking on those terms, because, you know, now that they're 35, 40, they may come back and be rock stars in the classroom, mm-hmm. and, you know, we could be the place they come to first.
Yeah, and something else we're looking at is those students, if they've been away for a number of years and they didn't finish that those lower division courses, their general education courses, then they're looking to come back, and if they've got a family and a career and they need a more hybrid or online experience to kind of get caught up and then be able to transition back in, we're looking at how best do we ensure that we have the offerings that they need. Under the provost leadership, we're looking at a second year of curricular innovation grants where we're going to be focusing on developing a core bundle of gen ed courses that will be available and predictably offered online so that those students who are coming back, we have the options in the formats that they want. If they're able to come to campus and they can take these courses in person, we absolutely want them to be able to do that. But we're hearing from RIA that these learners are, you know, they're looking at that flexibility as a key consideration for them. And so we're very much taking to heart the feedback we're getting from RIAP and how we think about ensuring that we're providing the most flexible experience for these students so they can come back as quickly as they can in the format that best meets their needs.
Yeah, it seems as though we're getting a lot out of that partnership that comes in addition to the actual number of students who come in. Mm-hmm. Trustee Herrero.
Yeah, I have a related question, and, you know, sorry, because now I feel like we're going into the insights that I asked for you guys to share with us later, but since we're already asking those questions, one is if we find that some of the students that stopped out here are now enrolled at a local community college, right, something that's closer to them, are we providing... And they say, you know what, like, I want to go back to NIU, but I need to stay close to home right now. Or, you know, all the reasons why students will go to community college. Are we still able to advise them so that they can take the classes that they need to be successful and transfer back into their program of study? You know, which takes, like, another step in how we're supporting adult learners and trying to get them back, but with student success in mind. That, and related to that is when we find out that they have institutional debt with us, right? Like, how are we thinking about addressing institutional debt, especially if there's a pathway for them to be successful here, even with the institutional debt? Just really curious about how we're thinking about it.
So you can comment now, or? I can share a little bit. We have looked into some of the financial. It's interesting because what we found is there's a significant portion who left with really zero balance. Yeah. And there's another significant who have a pretty high balance. There's not a lot in between. And because we had looked at this very closely to see if there was a program. I mean, there's some programs out there that we've looked at trying to model, but we just there really wasn't that number of students that had somewhere between like that 1,500 to 5,000 balance. It was either zero, and there were quite a few that really didn't have a balance. So in many of those cases, it might have been more of on an academic dismissal. So that's a little bit about the finance. With this initial cohort, I don't even know if we've sought after the students who have gone to a community college yet. So these would just be
not enrolled anywhere.
Right? And that number was our initial group, but it doesn't mean that we couldn't at some point, because through the clearinghouse, we still can research that information.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. I'm going to thank you very much for your presentation on behalf of the committee, and I'm going to ask the provost to move us to the next presentation.
Yes, item 8D is a presentation by our Associate Vice Provost for Teaching, Learning, and Digital Education, Jason Rohde, who's conveniently already at the podium. And Jason is going to be talking about what we are doing at NIU specifically to support AI use for teaching and learning.
Yes, so thank you so much, Provost Douglas Piper and President Freeman, for the opportunity to share briefly today a little bit of an overview of our institutional support for use of teaching of AI in teaching and learning. So if we can move to the next slide, please. As it's no surprise, I think, to anyone in this room, teaching and learning is really at the core of our mission here at the institution. It guides our commitment to fostering a vibrant academic community where students and faculty collaboratively pursue knowledge and growth. We work tirelessly to ensure that our diverse student body is able to work together and to work with our faculty, whether it's through traditional lectures, through interactive workshops, community-based projects, or research collaborations. We aim to provide a comprehensive learning experience that is empowering our students to become critical thinkers, effective communicators, and responsible global citizens. Next slide, please. So I have the privilege of working alongside an amazing team in our Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning, or we shorten that name around here to CITL. Our Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning provides comprehensive services supporting excellent teaching and learning at NIU, and we've been doing that for the past 25 years. We provide support for everyone who teaches at NIU, at all ranks, at all classifications, through professional development, through individual consultations, and a robust library of just-in-time resources. Further, we support teaching in all modalities, from fully in-person courses through blended, hybrid, and online teaching as well. We also provide higher levels of support for the design and delivery of courses included in our fully online programs and for students in those programs, from initial inquiry all the way through to graduation. Next slide, please. So one aspect of that support for teaching is providing extensive support for the integration of technology in teaching. For example, we provide training and support for teaching with Blackboard, which is our learning management system, as well as a number of web-based tools that support student connection and engagement. We also are collaborating with the Division of IT on supporting digital literacy across the curriculum through our designation as an Adobe Creative Campus. We're also partnering with the Office of the Provost and the Division of IT on updating technology in our learning spaces and providing support to our faculty to use that technology. Next slide, please. So to give you just a sense of the scope of that support this past academic year, we offered over 100 programs for over 1,000 attendees on fundamental principles of teaching, innovative teaching and learning strategies, hybrid and online teaching, as well as use of technology in teaching. And in fact, this past year, we worked individually with over 700 unique faculty, teaching staff, as well as graduate teaching assistants there were over 2,000 occasions when we met with those individuals. So a lot of repeat interactions over time as well. So certainly, the topic being AI here today in this talk, generative AI has been a significant disruptor in higher education. In late 2022 and early 2023 is when we started to see headlines come up, and we can go to the next slide. And this news was everywhere. We saw it in the prominent higher ed news sources, The Chronicle and Inside Higher Ed, EDUCAUSE, to name a few. You probably saw headlines like these in your email inbox almost daily at one point. And faculty everywhere that we saw were concerned about how student access to generative AI would undermine existing assessment strategies. They were also worried about how to best prepare students to live in and work in a Gen AI world, despite having little experience with those tools. Next slide, please. And so it was during this time, as these conversations were happening across higher education, where we sought to hear from our faculty their questions and their concerns about generative AI. And we looked for ways to connect our faculty to conversations to start to address those questions, but more importantly, to actually begin to explore opportunities to further enhance the teaching and learning experiences for our students with the power of AI. And so as we had a better understanding of the emerging faculty questions about AI, we then leveraged local expertise from our NIU faculty and staff who've been working with and researching artificial intelligence for years. These faculty generously participated in faculty panel discussions on AI and teaching, where we dug into many of these questions and concerns in greater depth. And these were widely attended. We recorded them, and they're now available as on-demand resources for faculty. Next slide. So coming out of those discussions, as we start to look at, as faculty are considering the many new and ever-changing AI tools, and then the ubiquitous and exponential nature of these tools, it can make it really difficult to know where to start or how they might best use this technology in their classroom. And so with input from our faculty experts, we work together to establish an AI and teaching toolkit that provides resources for all those who teach to explore generative artificial intelligence and learn how to get started with applying AI in their teaching. Elements include a quick start guide, recommendations for teaching with AI and about AI, samples of course level policies, for example, that faculty can adapt for their syllabi, and information specifically on how to use AI, such as guides on ChatGPT, and a brand new guide that we just launched last week on using the free version of Microsoft Copilot. This is Microsoft's AI tool that actually all of our NIU faculty, staff, and students can now access via their NIU credentials. So thanks to DoIt, our Microsoft 365 license provides commercial data protection, which ensures confidentiality and privacy for our students when they're using AI. And this is one of the areas that we heard from educators across campus that is a justifiable concern. So this toolkit, it's ever evolving as new tools become available and our overall understanding and acceptance of generative AI tools expands. Next slide. And so while we work to strategize about generative AI at the institution level, our faculty and staff also have to make decisions about how to approach AI at the course level. And so one of the key resources in the toolkit, which I alluded to previously, is a list of sample policies that approach AI in diverse ways. And, you know, for example, these two policies that you may be able to see on the screen, they come from the same institution. They're shared by faculty, and they offer sample language for those who either want to encourage use of AI in a particular assignment or prohibit the use of AI for particular reasons. And so while we don't have an institution-wide policy, some units, like first-year composition, they have developed guidelines for their faculty and instructors to follow. And in their case, they're encouraging a policy that does not fully prohibit use, but instead offers guidance for when and how AI use would be permitted. Next slide. And one of the first instructional technologies where we at NIU have adopted and are starting to see AI-driven capability be added in is within our Blackboard Learning Management System. Based on an underlying trustworthy AI framework that sets parameters for when and how Blackboard will integrate AI, the AI Design Assistant utilizes generative AI to help faculty to become more efficient in key course development tasks. These would be things like generating images for use in the course, writing test questions, designing authentic assessment prompts that are AI resistant, as well as generating rubrics. Faculty must always review and approve any content that's generated by AI via the Blackboard AI Design Assistant, and they're able to modify any aspects of the AI-generated materials. But it's proved to be a huge time saver for our faculty, gives them a leg up on many of these tasks. We piloted this tool this past spring semester. It was quite successful. We had 75 faculty opt in and pilot use of this tool. Feedback has been very positive up to this point, and so we'll be making this tool available to all of our faculty this coming fall. Next slide, please. This spring, we were also really excited to be able to extend our partnership with the Association of College and University Educators, or AQ. And some may be familiar that we have partnered with AQ for the past 4 years now to offer their year-long course on effective teaching practices, as well as shorter micro-credential on fostering a culture of belonging. And this spring, AQ introduced a four-course quick study series for faculty on teaching with artificial intelligence. These quick study courses were designed with our higher ed faculty and instructors in mind, and they discussed AI from both the conceptual perspective as well as a more practical, hands-on approach. A few of the topics included leveraging AI to develop course resources, writing effective AI prompts, empowering students to use AI responsibly, as well as teaching with AI-inclusive and AI-resistant learning experiences. We had 60 slots available in the spring semester for faculty to participate, and we were thrilled to fill every available slot. And these courses, while they're still ongoing, we are hearing continually from our faculty who have participated or are participating through the course what a benefit it has been for them and what ideas they are gleaning that they're able to and they plan to incorporate into their teaching moving forward. Next slide, please. So as AI opportunities continue to rapidly advance and evolve, and this is a very rapidly evolving landscape that we are in at this moment, Provost Ellis Piper, through her leadership, she's formed an AI action team, and she has charged this team to develop an initial plan for short-term strategies to address AI opportunities at NIU to support student recruitment, student success, teaching, curriculum, as well as overall our academic programs. We've got a great team that has been assembled of both faculty as well as university leadership, whose expertise and the shared leadership of this group is going to be essential in helping us to chart our next steps. Next slide, please. And so one of those next steps, and to help further inform this work, to again get that current faculty perspective, Dr. Andrea Guzman, Associate Professor of Communication, who, by the way, is chair of the AI Action Team, she is a renowned expert in artificial intelligence, and she's been facilitating meetups with faculty across campus. Most recently, she facilitated two faculty meetups specifically on the education topic to dig deeper again. One session was in person, another one was virtual. She had over 40 participants across those two sessions. And these were faculty who came together where we explored what faculty were already doing to incorporate AI into their teaching, as well as what they envisioned for the future of AI here at NIU. And she facilitated two similar conversations that were focused on researchers as well. And so once compiled, these results and these additional faculty perspectives will be shared with the AI Action Team as we then look to move ahead with developing that plan to further address AI opportunities. And I suspect you'll be hearing more from us in that regard in the future as well. Next slide, please. So as we prepare to wrap up, AI in no doubt is rapidly evolving. This field is evolving. Our society is evolving as a result of AI. And it's unclear at the moment what the future support exactly will be needed here. But in the meantime, we are continuing to be committed to supporting our faculty and our students as they develop their own skills in using AI and provide spaces where faculty can collaborate and explore. And so as additional instructional technologies incorporate AI, we also know that we need to be critical consumers of the technology and be thoughtful about how we remain competitive as an institution while also providing appropriate protections for our students. Next slide. And so if you'd like to hear a little bit more about what we talked about today and the various faculty supports and resources, this AI toolkit is available at the link, or you can snap a picture of that QR code and you can take a look. And as that continues to evolve over time, you can come back to that. And so with that, I know we've had a number of questions already, but I'm happy to take any additional questions on this topic that anyone might have.
Thank you very much, Trustee Wasowitz.
So, yeah, this is evolving quickly. It's been around for 30 years.
Yep.
In my mind, it's just this stuff is more business intelligence than artificial intelligence, but I think we're just scratching the surface. Do you see, I mean, I got this thought when I was at a presentation at the library about a month ago, and we're an expert in Southeast Asian studies. And I look at the public LLMs, and I look at the private LLMs, and do you see any way that we can use our expertise and things that we've been doing to build our own proprietary LLMs or small language models the way I look
yeah.
at it?
No, that's a great question, Chair Wasowitz, and I think those are exactly the kinds of questions that this AI action team is going to dig into a bit more as we're still at that stage, I feel like, where we're pulling together the experts and we're having those exploratory conversations. But I think you're absolutely right. I think every institution is looking at where's that expertise we already have internally, thinking about not just from the teaching and learning aspect. I know there's a separate group that is starting to look at AI for more of that kind of operational business processes, business intelligence kind of lens as well. I think there's huge opportunity, and I think those will be some of the recommendations that I think the provost is hoping to see may come from the action team recommendations. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's...
It all goes back to the data anyway.
It does. It really does, yeah.
Okay. Other questions from the committee members? Trustee Athas.
Thank you for your presentation, and great that we're working so hard with the faculty. Are there any, how about the students? Is there, I know that usually the students are way ahead of everybody else when it comes to new technology, but as far as how to use it effectively in the classroom and what's acceptable and what isn't acceptable, are there courses or are things that a professor would say before the class starts?
Yeah, so there's many ways to address the question, and mm-hmm. it's a fabulous question. I think it's one of these that is coming up and we're talking about with faculty mm-hmm. in many different contexts, right? Because the way in which you make use of generative AI, it's often discipline specific. The mm-hmm. ways in which you might use it would differ, right? Depending on the types of courses, the level of course that you might be in. Absolutely, I think one of the key considerations that faculty, we heard loud and clear from the get-go was, how do we help prepare our students?
Mm-hmm.
Not just knowing how to use it in their coursework here, but prepare them to, when it's expected that they need to be able to use this technology as part of going out into the workplace, right? And so these are things that we're looking at. We're asking these questions about, you know, in our lower division courses, when mm-hmm. students are coming in, and we're talking to them about, you know, effective strategies for studying and prioritizing time and all of that. How does the use of AI as another tool, right? It's another tool that is available. How do they think about that and start to brainstorm with it? The ability to have it almost as an intelligent tutor where you can ask questions mm-hmm. and, you know, there's a topic, something that they maybe are struggling with, they can go to AI and ask questions of the AI, and it can help them through processing through different, you know, aspects of understanding a topic or brainstorming a project idea, these kinds of things. And so what we often see, we try to look at it from multiple levels. There are the kinds of supports that we have through, for example, the Husky Academic Success Center. When we're talking with students about, you know, things that they can do to be successful, we can talk about it there. But often it's our faculty in the context of a course experience, okay. right? An activity, an assignment. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we're really focusing at the get-go from how our faculty envisioning where they can have those course-specific discussions with the students and really help them contextualize use in a real-world course experience. And so that I think we're starting to see that we're still really early on, mm-hmm. But we're starting to hear from the faculty some great results as they're having those discussions and working with the students in their courses.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Trustee Barsima.
Thank you. I'll try the microphone again, see if I can reduce the echo. Not quite sure how to state this, but I'll give it a whirl. I'm involved in a fund that's investing in a number of AI companies. So I've got a little bit of a background. At least I'm seeing the horizon. AI has the ability, in the past we thought from a serial standpoint. If, you know, A and B, if A is it, then we go to C, and then we calculate that, and then we go to D, E, and with AI, we're computing trillions of calculations at the same time. So as I look into the future, Lee mentioned this a little while back, that students right now today are calculating in their own mind about, well, do I go to college, or do I take a $28 an hour job working at, pick your company. But as I look into the future, a lot of those jobs are going to go away. They will be performed by robots. They will be performed by devices that are performing AI. What AI can't do, in my view, and I could be wrong, but what AI can't do is think from a critical thinking standpoint with the heart and critical thinking skills of the mind. And that's where I think students are going to look at higher ed and say, that's something that AI can't replace me on. And so in a long-winded way, and again, I hadn't kind of pre-thought this out, so I'm sorry to drone on here, but are we thinking about curriculum where AI is not going to replace it in the future? And I think a lot of that curriculum is going to come with critical thinking skills and thinking with the heart, which again is something that a robot is not going to be able to do. Thoughts?
Absolutely. And that's in Provost Ellis Piper's charge to our AI action team. She explicitly talked about our curriculum, and that's an area that we've been asked to look at. You know, what are those discipline-specific areas, but across our curriculum, what are some steps we should be taking holistically to take that fresh look at our curriculum from that AI lens? So absolutely, and I don't know, Provost Ellis Piper, if there's anything else you wanted to add in that regard. But.
I think your point is a good one when we think about higher order thinking skills, and we think about, you know, like you said, being able to think critically and creatively, being able to synthesize, being able to make evaluative judgments, being able to look at things ethically. I think that those are definitely things that we do, but I think that this is an opportunity for us to really talk about the value of developing those kinds of skills and strategies for our students, you know, why we're teaching in those kinds of ways, making that more explicit to them. You know, curriculum is sort of like a living thing, meaning that our fields, our disciplines, the research, employers, society will pose different questions and expectations. Our professional associations present different and new standards. Our accrediting bodies, you know, pose new expectations for us. And so we really need to lean into and embrace that notion of constantly looking at reviewing our curricula, reviewing our programs, and making sure that they are relevant, that they are robust, that they are preparing our students not just for today, but preparing them with the skills and strategies that will help them in tomorrow with the kinds of questions that we aren't even thinking about at this moment. And so that ability to think creatively and critically and analytically and ethically are skills that will rise above just acquiring specific knowledge. And so I think that curricular review process is something that we need to you know, really lean into and really ask those powerful, important questions to ensure that our curricula are modern and relevant and current and preparing students effectively for what they hope to do today, tomorrow, and beyond that.
If I could add just one thing to that, you know, this is academic affairs, student affairs, but also personnel. And I think the professional development that we offer our faculty and our staff is really important as the expectations of the world and the workforce change. We want students who intern and work on campus to be in environments that mimic what's going on in the real world. And we want our staff to have tools that allow them to divert their intellect and attention to higher order issues and ideas rather than some of the more rote work, and to be able to gain the skills they need to do that without fear that they're going to be replacing themselves out of a job. So I, you know, as you talk to higher ed leaders across the sector, both of those concerns are always top of mind. Are we doing the right thing from a curricular standpoint? Are we preparing students the way we need to? And are we deploying AI on our campus and professionally developing our staff in a way that will keep our institution competitive? Yeah,
I think the places of higher education, and I know we will be one of them, that are providing the right curriculum, there's going to be an even greater need for them going forward into the future than there is today. Just got to get the curriculum correct as you look out over the next, you know, 10 years and such. So thank you.
Trustee Strong?
I just want to also comment, and I applaud the university's foresight and initiative and the work being done to date on this, because this is certainly going to be a key topic for years to come. I'm a big supporter of technology advancement. I do share some of Dennis's concerns that he expressed there, but also the issue around business ethics in the use of this. And I'll just use an example. This early last summer, on one of the corporate boards I serve on, one of the board members came on in person on a Zoom session, but then also logged in with a AI program and didn't alert any of the other board members, you know, and it raised initially concern amongst the board members. And so there are ongoing ethics issues that are going to be developed, and the government is certainly watching and going to try to formulate some things around this too. But this is coming, and it's all going to evolve over time, but there are challenges with it.
No other comments from the committee members, then I will thank you for your university report. Thank you for the presentation. Are there other matters to come before the committee? Seeing that there are no other matters, the next meeting date of the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee will be August 22nd, 2024. Before I adjourn the meeting, I just want to take a moment and thank everyone who made this meeting possible. That includes our provost for curating the subjects of this meeting as our committee liaison. Thank you to the University Advisory Committee members for participating in our meeting. And anything that you did prior to this to become aware and participate in its agenda. And thank you to Tony and his media services folks for making this meeting possible and bringing people into the room from afar, and to Ms. Hannon for the work that you do in support of the committee. So with that, may I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Barsema.
Is there a second? There's a motion by Trustee Barsema, a second by Trustee Athis. Ms. Hannon, would you please take the roll call vote?
Trustee Rita Athis?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsema?
Yes.
Committee Chair John Butler?
Yes.
Board Chair Montel Gales? Trustee Veronica Herrero? Trustee Tim Moore?
Yes.
Trustee Leland Strom?
Yes.
Committee Vice Chair Eric Wesley?
Yes.
Okay, it looks as though this concludes then the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee meeting. We're going to reconvene at the Research and Innovation, Legal and Legislative Affairs Committee.
10 minutes.
10 minutes, yeah, so.
10:25.
10:25, and this adjourns the meeting.